Shabbat Toldot Generations. It's interesting, isn't it, when you get to a passage in the Messianic writings like that one in there, so the letter of the community to the Jewish community in Rome in chapter 9, 6 to 21, we read this morning. You know, how much it leans back upon Malachi, leans back upon Genesis and Bereshit. And all these people who say, no, you know, we know in history, so many were saying, back in the 3rd, 4th century, we don't need the Tanakh. We've got the Messianic writings, that's all we need. By the way, it was actually one of the so-called church fathers who came up with the name of the New Testament. That was actually quite a late name. It was never called that in the beginning. Messianic writings is a good enough title as any, I think, for what we've got in the scripture portion there. But when we read a portion like this, isn't it amazing how it leans back so much upon the Tanakh and everything that's gone before? How can you even rip these two apart? You can't. It's so obvious it's all one document, one revelation of Judaism that runs all the way through. It's a powerful thought when you think of it in that way. How much will we have left? I think people have actually tried to work it out. You end up with about 2 pages left of the Messianic writings if you remove everything, every hint, every verse, every reference from the Tanakh, from the Messianic writings. You'd have about 2 pages of paper left. It's a useless endeavour. It's all one thing. It's Judaism. It's what it is. Our portion this morning, therefore, came from Bereshit, Genesis 25, 19 to 28. From the Haftarah, it was from the prophet Malachi. And that was chapter 1, 1 to 11, the famous bit that we all know. And from the Messianic writings there, as I said, that was from the letter to the Jewish community in Rome. And that came from chapter 9 of that letter, 6 through to 21. Toldot Generations. It's the generation game again. Come on, Bruce Forsyth lovers, where are you? You should hear. Instantly, I don't like it. I'm getting flashbacks to conveyor belts, right? And actually, that's not a bad picture in some ways. Forgive me for bringing it down to Bruce Forsyth level, but on one level, it's kind of not. It goes through, and this is the generation of Yitzchak, is the generation of this, is the generation of that. And it begins to list all of the people that go through our historical ancient lines that make up Israel. It's one of those passages where someone said to me once, some wag said, you know, in training colleges they say, they give you these portions to say, preach on that if you can. You know, the generations, the list of names. Well, actually, it's not that difficult, really, when you think about it, but people think it is, but it really, really isn't. Toldot generations. These are the generations. Yes, it looks like they're just ticking by like a conveyor belt, running by, generation goes by, another one goes by. And so much of our life is like that, isn't it? Now, I suspect for most of you, your years were ticking by. Depends on how long it took before you woke up to know the Lord. But your years were ticking by until one day, bing, the Lord turned the light on, didn't he? And your whole life changed. Went off in a completely new direction. Up to that point, your life had been fairly insignificant. It just carried on. You'd gone shopping. You woke up. You had breakfast. You went to work or college or whatever it was that you did. And then one day, your life takes on a different meaning. One day your life stood out as being something different from those around you and even from what was going on before that point in your own life. And we have one of these moments in the portion this week. This one generation suddenly stands out as being pivotal. The generations are just ticking on by until suddenly events seem to hinge on certain individuals, families and moments in those families, while the blind masses just seem to be passing on by. We could put it this way, and as it was ticking on by, suddenly God added significance to the family tree. Significance is the word this morning. You see it mapped out here with Yaakov and Esau, with Rivka. Things carry on as normal until suddenly they didn't carry on as normal anymore. You know, people, in many ways, we're living in a generation like that right now. The very fact that a Messianic synagogue again tells us right now, this is a generation of significance. It was a generation of significance back in 1948. the generation, it was around them, was the generation of significance, the pioneers who went out to Israel, who actually in many ways truly did literally give their lives in the pursuit of setting up and establishing our national homeland again. These people had lives of significance. We have lives of significance because we are sitting here this morning. Significance is what God brings to human people's lives. And that moment for Rivka begins when she begins to realize that something strange is going on in her belly. As the scriptures tell us. And she's wondering, pondering and thinking about, Lord, what is happening inside me? Two sons already at war before they were even born. Imagine the scenario. A war that was seemingly sparked, according to Romans 9 that we heard this morning, by the Lord's choice of one over against the other before they were even born. And it's almost like these two unborn children. Don't tell me there's not life before birth. There is. These two children knew this somehow in their own spirits, and they're already fighting against each other for significance before God. God's choice from the very outset here created that significance in their lives. Their lives at that moment would take on a deeper meaning. These were not just going to be two children. They weren't just going to be twins like many people had, I'm sure, and just lived through their lives and they went fishing and hunting and did whatever. Suddenly these two babies had an eternal significance that was going to impact the world around them and their very nation. Significance. Significance because God willed it to be so. As the scriptures say, as clay in the potter's hands. God decided that it would thus be. And it was. And I'm not talking this morning about predetermination, that kind of thing. It's not where I'm going. But the point is that God chooses and wills and therefore adds significance to people's lives in this way. Two nations, Rivka was told, are in your womb. And actually, it wasn't just boys, it was the destinies of significance that were being born. Two whole nations would come into existence that day that would go on to impact the world and change human history. They're just babies as yet unborn. And yet God could see it all before each one of them. Significance. And it's because each and every human being carries in ourselves that image of God. Each one of us actually has that potential to serve God and see that significance in our lives too. Each and every one of us. As I keep on saying, you know, God has given us free will. He gives us a free choice. He allows each and every one of us every day to stand before him and either accept that calling, accept that significance, or to reject it instead and do something else. And crazily, some do go on to reject the positive and the good impact they can have for selfish motives or whatever it may be, just straight rebellion against God, and go on to cause much harm, tragedy on this planet and to humanity in general. And people do this. We know certain characters in history. I don't even want to mention their name on this Shabbat. Not that long ago with the Second World War. Just one human being and the devastation that one human being brought. Yeah, his life had significance, but not in God. Significance in terms of the destruction of humanity, yes. But not in God's significance. We make those choices. We each and every one of us have the potential there, carrying that image, to choose that our lives too can have a significance before God, for the people around us, in the right way. Or if you rebel against God, or if you choose a different path, it can go on to be a significant path against God's will and cause harm and damage. And really, you need to look at the Middle East situation right now for the ripples of these two sons today. That is still hurting humanity. That there are still children being born in areas within the Middle East there, in Israel's territories. There's still children being born who are being brought up, trained up to walk around with bomb belts by the time they're five. And it breaks my heart because it's adults making choices to rebel against God and cause more harm and destruction in this planet and in this world. So much depends on how we respond to God's calling and purpose for our lives. I want to put it to you that none of us, none of us even here, or listening or anywhere else, none of us are truly aware of how significant we can be and potentially will be, because none of us have future hindsight built into us. We don't know. You don't know how God is going to use you tomorrow, next week, next year. But God does. And it's He who builds that significance into our lives in this way, for how we are going to fit into His pattern, into His bigger tapestry of His narrative as it unfolds. We don't know which stitch we are. We don't know which bit that we are that's going to join that bit to that bit, that otherwise if we'd rebelled against God would never happen, and the chaos that would ensue from all of that. But each and every one of us has that potential to take that significance for our own lives and use it for the glory of God. And these twins, certainly even before birth, they weren't aware of God's significance or calling, not consciously aware in that way, although it was coming out in their battling and their warring. And yet this dynamic between Yaakov and Esau, it adds to our understanding of the response required. Because Esau does something historically really, really stupid, doesn't he? On one hand, praise God he did, on another hand, how crazy must he have been? This is the passage where we read that Esau sells his birthright to his younger brother for a pot of stew. There's something about that event for me that the sheer banality of it all, the pittance of this event, the callousness of the attitudes on display, selling his birthright for his brother for a pittance. And I was contemplating, in a sense, how Esau could even have got himself into that position, or in thinking about the potential significance of this man, bearing in mind he is the one who came out first, the older brother. You notice the scriptures go on to say, the older will serve the younger, says the Lord. The first one out, the birthright belongs to this man. It's his. That means he gets the inheritance, or at least the larger share of the inheritance. He gets to be the priestly role within that family, to lead that next generation on. He's the prophet, if you like, of that family. The one who wears that spiritual mantle that's passed on down to him. It's an important role this man has got. It's his. Scriptures mandate this, the firstborn, and what is handed on down to them. We see it written in the scriptures, and it most certainly legally belonged to him. What on earth was Esau playing at? With all of this significance that God had given him, everything which was so rightfully his, what was his game? What was he up to? And we're left with some interesting thoughts. Did he not know about the value of the inheritance? Did he not understand what could have been his, what naturally was going to be his? Did he not know the impact that he could have had if he'd followed through with the promises of God, with his expected cultural Torah-mandated firstborn role? Did he not understand what was his and the impact he could have had with that inheritance, spiritually and otherwise, in his own generation and beyond? Did he not take the time to discuss the importance of all of this with his father? Or worse, did he? Did he know what was his? And he just didn't care. It's kind of a scary thought. This man who had been given so much potential significance by God in his generation, mindlessly apparently tossed it away for a bowl of stew. This narrative paints Esau as standing before these three options, living in the now which is what Esau did. He literally was in the now, living in the now. Tomorrow was an eternity away for this man. All he cared about was what is now, right now, right before me. What is my situation now? Not will it be tomorrow? What is the bigger picture? What's happening with the family? What's happening with the community? No, this is a man, it's him, and it's what is happening now, the situation he is in, that all that counts to him. Unable to lift his eyes to the eternal perspective of the role that he might play, could have played, should have played, according to the scriptures. I want to put it to you that this man, whether he was starving to death or not, I mean, I'm not inclined to accept that he was a hunter. Are we saying that when he was out getting the game to bring it back to the family, that he didn't just kill a little deer for himself and roast it before he came home? Of course he did. He knew how to feed himself. He's a grown man. I've been astonished if he was hungry, starving to death. And yet he still throws it away. Something deeper going on here. This is a man, apparently, who is saying to his brother, assuming that to say that he is in some existential crisis here, food-wise or whatever, saying, I will do anything to stop the pain right now. I want this to end. I'm done. I'm just finished with this situation. I cannot take it anymore. I will just stop it now. Bowl of stew, yeah, take my birthright. I don't care. Just give me that food. Right now. All I need right now is this. I've just got to get through this and survive. And I don't care what's coming tomorrow. I don't care what's next week or next generation. I'm not even interested. This is too much. Too much now, and I need it to stop, is the impression that we get of this man. This is short-term spiritual man at his best. The one who's only looking at what is right happening before their eyes. And we know the enemy does that with us too, doesn't he? Tosses things that we just end up, all we're looking at is the pain that is right now. And all our prayers to the Lord is stop this pain right now. I'll do anything, Lord, to stop this pain right now. Until we almost feel we can't take it anymore and we want to just get off the train. Short-term spiritual thinking. Esau's willingness to shut himself off from the blessings of God for what seemed momentarily important in his own eyes is deeply shocking. But ultimately tells us that Esau had no spiritual perspective at all. He abrogated his own role in fulfilling the promises of God through his own life. And on one level, thank goodness he did. But on another level, what a shocking indictment of this man. Of a role model that he was actually meant to be. Who counted it as so little, the significance and purpose that God had brought into his life, the calling he had to be that firstborn, to lead the next generation on. He literally saw it as valueless and was willing to throw it away for a plate of food. Amazing thing, possibly, that God could have given him through all of this. And yet he just throws it away. Something about the situation that we see here, we compare Yaakov and Esau, in the end with God's choice of which man he was going to work with, because we should equally be careful of pushing Yaakov up on a pedestal as a pinnacle of integrity, because frankly he wasn't. This is not why God chose Yaakov. You know, at one point where Yaakov clearly, openly lies to his father. When his father says, you know, are you Esau? And Yaakov says, yes, I am. It's a lie. Despite being airbrushed away by Rashi and many of our greats who balk at the idea of our father Yaakov lying and airbrush it away by adding extra words into the verse that we can't see but actually are there. No, we're not going to play games with the scriptures. Both Yaakov and Esav are deeply flawed. Both of them are flawed characters. We know that. If Esav was the one who was out hunting, the self-made man, the one who was living in the flesh, in the power of who he was, and yet abrogating his spiritual role. Okay, on one hand, Esav clearly, you know, falling through that gap of righteousness. No, you are not the man. Get out of here. Oh, really? And Yaakov was the man who then only next week is sitting and standing in a river fighting God all night? Is that any better? The one who lies to his own father? These are two brothers in many ways who are both deeply flawed. And yet one of them God must choose to carry the beacon of light to the next generation. The calling of Israel. The narrative of salvation through history. One of them must carry that light forward. And if we hit the important point in all of this, we are all deeply flawed. And yet some of us are usable to the Lord and some of us are not. As Romans says, vessels of honour, vessels of dishonour. And what is it that makes a difference? Why is it that Yaakov at this point goes on to become a vessel of honour where Esau becomes a vessel of dishonour? What is it between these two? When we look at their flawed natures and characters, which are brazenly on display in this generation. One of them would carry that into that significance of God into the next generation, yet both so deeply flawed. The difference simply is this. Yaakov understands the importance of God's calling and purpose in that life of the next generational leader. He understands the calling of God generationally in this. He looks at his brother and in his own way, and just as his mother is concluding as well, looks at Esav and says, "You're not it. You're not it. This cannot go to you." He's a quiet man, a passive man, a meek man. "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit Haaretz," says the scriptures. It's true here with Yaakov, it's just as true here. He's not a fighting man, he's not out there going to war, he's not out there killing animals and so on. Scriptures and traditions record for us, according to the rabbis, and it says that he was a man living in tents, records for us that, you know, he was a man studying the Torah. Now we know that that isn't true, but, you know, we can have a little bit of latitude on this. This is essentially a man who busied himself with the Lord. Whereas Esav was out hunting, the go-getter. Yaakov understands the inheritance, understands the importance of carrying that inheritance forward, passionately committed to seeing it continue in the right way. He loves God and he loves the idea of this covenant reaching through time and history, and he wants to be a part of it. He's committed himself to be a part of it. Yes, flaws and all. He knows that he's not perfect, and he knows when he's fighting God and he's not perfect. He ends up with a physical limp from God that night as a reminder to him, you are not perfect. But God still chose him. And you can sit there and say, yeah, but my life isn't significant. I've got no calling. I've got no grand scheme. You remember what I said a few moments ago about none of us have got future hindsight? We do not know the significance of God that can be in your life. It happens when you reach that point and you think to yourself, there is a calling of God within his movement, within his end times, within what God is doing in history. I want to be a part of it to see God's will happen. Bingo, you are in. That's what eventually it comes down to. Yaakov knows the significance of all of this, and now the significance that his life can play. His mother knows this. And however we view the contrivances that were going on in the family that day, and the shenanigans that are going on with him being dressed up in hairy animal, I mean, you know, it's crazy. It's something like Panto going on here. And you look at that scenario and the mother's involved, you know, she's in on it, huh? Jacob's in on it, and Esau's being deceived. The father's half blind. Why would he even do that to a blind old man? You go through that passage and you think, Lord, what is this even in the scriptures? Why is that even in the scriptures? It's so awful. But there's a humanity about the word of God, a humanity about the scriptures, a humanity level of God's narrative of his involvement with mankind, which is humbling when we see how God uses us. When you sit there and say, but I'm of no significance, I've got nothing, I am nothing, I've got nothing to give, but is your heart before God saying, I want to be part of what God is calling us to do? And if your answer is yes, he will use you, because God has already brought an antidote to your sin. He has dealt with that. He's dealt with your feelings of inadequacy. He's dealt with your feelings of hopelessness, that you've got nothing to do, nothing to play, no part to do in all this. He's dealt with all of that nonsense. He's just waiting for you to sit up one day and say, I want to see that significance of your will in my life. I want to be there. I want to be the one who takes that forward. And Yaakov and his mother at that point, realizing the critical nature, the pivotal nature of that significance in history, set about ensuring the course goes forward in the right way. Now, however else we judge that scenario, the one thing we do know from history is that they did the right thing. It was right. We wouldn't be sitting here today, I don't think. I mean, consider for a moment, if Esau, as the leader of Israel, if he hadn't sold that birthright for a bowl of stew, imagine Esau had become our forefather in that way. Abraham, Esau, and Jacob, or whatever. I mean, who knows if there'd even been a Jacob? Could all have been over by that generation? If Esau had gone on to develop the leadership style which he clearly was as a human being, with no regard to God and no regard to the important spiritual aspects of what God was calling him to do in his life, he just trivialized them, diminished them, saw them as nothing. If he'd been allowed to continue in that way, the whole historic salvation message of Israel could have stopped in that generation. He could have taken the whole family to war, and we could have all been annihilated, and it would have been over. But Yaakov knows, the mother knows, this cannot happen. Not with Esau, this is not the one. It has to be Yaakov. Yes, flaws, warts, sin, and all. It has to be him. You know, significance and meaning in your life doesn't just happen. I've just been hinting at this. You don't become significant, you don't have a meaning to your life just by being born. The masses pass us by, the generations flow by us all the time with apparent meaningless lives. They're just alive. That's it. You see it day by day. People with death in their eyes, even though they're maybe 30, 40 years away from the actual event, they've already given up on life. They're just waking up, having breakfast and doing stuff. That's all they're doing. No real significance to their life, no real meaning to their life. Significance and meaning happens. It happens when you're willing to stand up and fight for what God has called you to. You know what God has called you to. You know the words that you've had from God about your life. You know. And significance and meaning will happen when you stand up and say, Hineni, here I am, Lord, ready to serve you. Yaakov stepped up at that moment. Significance happens when we fight for what God has called us to. We don't just roll over, have our tummies tickled. So we stand up and begin to push back against the oppression. I said at the beginning how the enemy would just throw stuff before our feet there to try and stop us and prevent us and everything else, all these things that happen. When you suddenly think, I just can't. At that point is the moment when you need to make a decision. Significance and importance is yours that day. If despite all of your flawed nature, all of your aspects which we can despair about, all of these things may be true, but at that moment if we say, yet today, Lord, I will stand up and be counted and do your will. I often hear it from people today. Sometimes even from people, yes, even in our community here. And they say to me, Rabbi, I just can't carry on anymore. It's too much. It's too much. That is the day of your significance. That is the day of your significance. Because that day you make a choice. You make a choice whether you're going to still walk on with the Lord or whether you just lean back and think, okay, get bring in the Labrador, the pipe and the felt slippers and I will just sit and just sit out the rest of my life. That's the day of your significance. When you actually make your life count and you do something for the Lord and you push back and you say, no, enough already. My life is not going in that direction, it's going in this direction and I'm not going to be pushed from one way to the other. What God is looking for in us is response. Whether we'll fight for that calling, the importance, the meaning, the priority in our lives, He's looking for our response. And there's another little subtext, I think, in all of this, which can be quite surprising. I've just touched upon it earlier there, about Esau being the firstborn and the promises of God and the covenants of God actually technically being for him, not for Yaakov, but for Esau. Scripturally, Torah mandated that was true. Esau did have the right as the firstborn to take the birthright. It's theologically correct. The purist would have insisted that Esau would have been the one. Think about that for a moment. Theologically speaking, the theological purist in our midst would say, Yaakov's the wrong one. It's Esau. And yet, you can be completely wrong and be theologically pure. God's choice overrode the purest theology. I find it quite a shock, but it's one of the things that the rabbis talk about, one of the things that we need to understand. We can lead our lives by purest, righteous theology, and we can still be completely wrong. Because God's choice sometimes takes us into areas and directions which are, humanly speaking, quite shocking. The enemy tried at that moment in time to derail history. Theology was on his side. Righteousness was on his side. But the enemy tried to derail history. The history that Yaakov's life was going to make, in terms of what Israel was going to be. What is your birthright worth? The bit that God has called you to do, your calling and task, your potential significance, what is your birthright worth? When you are up against it and the enemy is trying to derail you from your calling and your task, your meaning for your life, the reason why you were born, when you've discovered why you were born, and it wasn't just because of your parents, but there's a reason in the Lord why you were born, when you've discovered that, and the enemy tries to push in hard to derail you and push you away from the track that will take you to your point in destiny in the Lord of what He's called you to do. What are you going to do? What is your birthright worth at that point? When the pressure comes on hard, when everything around you is crashing around you and it makes no sense and your life is tough and everything is a problem and every morning it looks dark and you don't know how you're going to go on, at that point do you say, give me a bowl of soup? Or do you conversely say, what God has called me to is way more important, and now I will get up and move on and continue to walk with the Lord? What is your birthright worth? There's one thing I can assure you. If you are called of God, and we all are, and I'm not just saying that you're all going to be up here as rabbis, I don't mean that. But we are all called in God to be, in this generation, to be people of that significance for the revival of our people. And trust me, if you're called to that, the going's going to get tough. It will. I said to someone yesterday, they're asking me about this and saying, I want to come into the Messianic movement. I said, I'm going to pray for you. And it's like, oh, good, yeah, pray for me. No, I'm going to pray for you that you survive. That you still stand in a month's time, 2 months' time. You don't touch Israel without getting a target painted on you. It's true, spiritually. The going is going to get tough. And I think if we think it's tough now, then we're deceiving ourselves. There's still a lot more to come. God is testing us, training us right now to be ready for what is to come. But if the enemy can derail you from reaching that significance, then he will do so. And I can think of some particular key people right now in the movement, even within our more local movement, and I'm speaking to these people. You know who you are. Do not let the enemy derail you from your calling in God. It's important, because you will go on to have significance in the Lord, just as Yaakov did. And it may mean that you're facing situations in your life that you do not understand, cannot understand, seem desperate and crazy and unbalanced and theologically completely up the spout. None of that ultimately matters. God makes choices of the people that he calls, regardless, because he knows those situations. And still he calls you. And still he's using you. Still he's calling you to fulfill the purpose and significance of your life. So Yaakov was flawed. Welcome to the club. You know? I'm not ashamed to have my weaknesses and vulnerabilities and my flaws, of which there are many. I'm not ashamed to have them on view. Why? Because in my weakness, I'm strong in the Lord. Because I'm not that strong. Will you fight for it? Will you fight for what God has called you to, as Yaakov did? Or will you let your destiny be derailed by the connivances of the enemy, the traps, the plots, and the nonsense, and the distractions, and the this, and the that? You know, as long as we keep playing to that game, the enemy will keep on throwing them at us. Because we're dancing like this around everything, and the enemy's going, oh, look at them dance, well, it's lots of more in. We've got to stop dancing. Say, I'm not done, I'm finished, I'm standing still, I am not dancing anymore. Enough of this nonsense. If we stand with the confidence and authority of Adonai in that way, then we too can be overcomers, as I was saying the other day. It's how we respond in those situations. God will give you significance. You cannot give significance to your life. You cannot do it, because you do not know how you are yet to be significant in the calling and will of God. All I will say is this. If you respond in the right way when God calls you and leads you to be a part of whatever is going on in the way he calls you to do this, if you respond in the right way, Hineni, here I am, Lord, use me, we sang this morning. If we do that, then there is that potential for that significance in the generation that you are living in, way beyond what you thought. We do not know, next generation, if the Lord tarries, what fruit will come from Adat Yeshua, the UMS and everything that goes around it, the outreach globally that's happening around us. We do not know and understand the impact of what can happen through this. God knows. All I know is that I've got to get up here and open my mouth and utter some sounds every week. Although you know, you've got to come in and do your bit, whether it's cleaning or teas and coffees or doing that or doing this or building or right. Each one of us, it doesn't matter. You do the bit that God has called you to do. We do not know the significance of it now, but it will come further down the line. Yes, the cost will be high. They were for Yeshua. They can be high for us too. And the opposition is strong. But remember, God is always stronger than anything which comes our way. Always. All he needs from you, as it was with Yaakov, is a yes. Yes, Lord, I am here. Use me to further your narrative of salvation in my day. Amen.